with me. I'm sorry that we have just such a little period of time to talk about this important issue, but I do want to make sure that folks realize that you will be here in Portland Thursday, August 7th, 2014 at the First Unitarian Church of Portland, Southwest 12th and Salmon. Doors open 6:30, programs from 7 till 9:30 p.m. Drones in Oregon, Myths, Facts, and Futures. Is there anything else you'd like to say briefly before we have to go, Colonel Ann?
Well, I just would say that I have traveled to many of the countries where our assassin drones are being used. I have traveled to Afghanistan, Pakistan, and Yemen and talked with families of victims of our assassin drones. So the issue of weaponization of these drones in the United States by law enforcement organization is something that I'm sure we'll be bringing up on the panel, and I suspect everybody will be very anxious to prevent that happening here in the United States.
Okay. Thank you again, retired Colonel Ann.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Yes, as retired Colonel Ann Wright. She'll be speaking Thursday, August 7th, at the First Unitarian Church in Portland, part of a panel, Drones in Oregon, Myths, Facts, and Futures. We look forward to seeing you there, Colonel.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
And they'll be mine, all mine, practicing 24 hours a day, 365 days a year.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Northwest Film Center screening of The 5,000 Fingers of Dr. T as part of the Cinema Under the Stars program on Thursday, August 7th at 7 p.m. The 5,000 Fingers of Dr. T is a musical fantasy film with the story, screenplay, and lyrics written by Dr. Seuss. Before the film, the Grand Style Orchestra will be playing a set of improvisational free jazz music. Again, that's The 5,000 Fingers of Dr. T, part of the top-down cinema series of the Northwest Film Center on August 7th on the roof of the Hotel Deluxe's parking structure at Southwest 15th and Yamhill. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com.
This program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Radio Cab, serving the metro area since 1946 with service 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Radio Cab offers airport service, wheelchair-accessible vans, and can be reached at 503-227-1212. In Vancouver at 360-694-1234 or radiocab.net.
What's up, everybody? This is Goddess of Goddess and She, and you're tuning in to KBOO Portland. Holla at your girl.
Out Loud, the queer culture radio show on KBOO Portland.
Welcome to Out Loud, the queer culture radio show on KBOO Portland. My name is Carla, and tonight we are going to be welcoming to the studios Todd, who is the caretaker of the Alice Coltrane Memorial Coliseum in Northeast Portland. And we're going to be discussing the Queer Ancestral Noise Fest, which is happening very soon, and it is featuring the Rainbow in the Dark Tour. So stay tuned to hear more about the Alice Coltrane Memorial Coliseum and this Queer Ancestral Noise Fest in just a few moments. Before we get to our interview tonight, I want to let you know how to connect with us online. We love to hear from our listeners. Our email address is outloudradio@gmail.com, and you can connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter. Look for KBOO Out Loud on both Facebook and Twitter. And next week, we will be welcoming back to Out Loud. Alan will be hosting the show next week. So we hope that you'll return to this show and continue listening into the future. Now, before we get to our interview for this evening, we want to take a short musical break. Tonight, we're going to be featuring some music from some artists that are performing here in Portland in the near future. And this first musical break is going to be from Tender Forever, who is performing here in Portland on August 10th at Mississippi Studios. Here is a song from Tender Forever.
Maybe you are gone. Maybe you are gone and we'll never get back. Your blood must tell the truth, 'cause it's never been this black. Colors are no colors, they say if we don't have a flag. Colors, we need colors. Let me ask you where we're at. Maybe we got lost, not knowing where we're from. And maybe we are ghosts, or maybe we are gone.
That song was titled Where Are We From? It's both the name of the side song and the name of the new album from Tender Forever. Tender Forever's next show here in Portland is on August 10th at Mississippi Studios. We'll be featuring another song from Tender Forever later in the show. Next, I'd like to welcome Todd to the KBOO Studios. Welcome, Todd.
Hey, Carla. Nice to be here.
Yeah, nice to have you. Now, for folks that aren't familiar, maybe let's start with a little description. Tell us about the Alice Coltrane Memorial Coliseum. What's that all about?
Well, it's a space I run here in Portland. I live there with a few other people. It's... you know, technically it's just a house with some artists in it, but it's also an ex-Hare Krishna temple with some interesting history. We actually recently found out that Steve Jobs used to attend Hare Krishna lunches there during his time at Reed.
How exciting.
Yeah, no, very strange. Very strange. So if you're familiar with the building on 42nd, it has the Hare Krishna mantra on the side, but when you look in the windows, doesn't quite appear to be so pious, then you're looking at the Alice Coltrane Memorial Coliseum. But we are under the protection and guidance of the spirit of Alice Coltrane, the former wife of John Coltrane, and, honor the artistic ancestors there, which is part of what we'll talk about later.
Okay. And for folks that aren't familiar, we're talking about Northeast 42nd in Northeast Portland, between Fremont and Killingsworth, or between Prescott and Killingsworth.
Yeah, it's actually at 5135 Northeast 42nd on Sumner and 42nd.
Perfect. Just a couple blocks south of Killingsworth. And you have, I guess I've been to music events there. There's different, it's an art space, there's art shows.
Yeah, there's been a number of different people who have run it under various names, as often happens in Portland, but it's one of the few remaining dedicated spaces like that that I know of, at least. Mm-hmm. So I'm happy to be its current caretaker.
Wonderful. Well, and as someone who's appreciated the art there, I say thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome.
And for folks that pass by, it does still have the Hare Krishna chant on the outside of the building, so you might have noticed that. And you have been working on an upcoming something something special.
Yes. So exactly.
Let's talk about that.
Yeah. So on August 14th, there is a traveling bus filled with approximately 9 to 11 queer noise musicians who have been traveling across the country from Baltimore for about a month now. They are the Rainbow in the Dark Tour, and a number of them know each other from all over the country. It's largely the brainchild of someone named Mona, who does a project called Gay Orphans. And she owns a large yellow school bus named Shazara that she has traveled across the country on a number of times. And her dream was to unite queers who do underground music and art. Because normally, even though there is in many places, in many large cities, kind of a queer music scene, queer people are often isolated in like experimental or fringe art scenes just because there aren't that many people involved. It's strange to think, because a lot of the people that were the innovators of these forms of music, if we're talking about like John Cage or Pauline Oliveros, were queer. So as modern queer experimental music artists, we decided that this would be a good idea, or they did, and then they brought it to me. I got a phone call about a month ago that was, hey, do you want to do this show? And of course I did. And so on August 14th, there will be a large yellow school bus out in front of the Alice Coltrane Memorial Coliseum. And from about 7 p.m. onward, we will be creating a autonomous zone.
How exciting. And I appreciate that you said at 7 o'clock, because there are going to be many, 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 too many to name on this radio show tonight, but many different performers, artists. And so starting at 7 is not queer time. It's not Portland time. It's the actual time.
Yes, the actual time. There will definitely, we will definitely be starting at 7, because there are at least 13 acts that will be playing.
How exciting.
Prior to the end of the night.
Okay. What's the cost for all this awesomeness?
Well, it's based on donations. I know that, you know, you have special rules on the radio.
Well, and we can talk about it, I guess. So if folks can afford to spend $15,
$20
bucks?
Let's just say, yes, exactly. No one will be turned away, but all donations will be accepted. It's all going to the travelers, to their gas fund, So if you are interested in supporting crazy traveling queer art that's, you know, changing people's lives across the country, then they're the people to talk to. You can also go to their Indiegogo campaign, which is going to be linked on the Out Loud site, and help support them there. They're actually filming a documentary as they travel, which will be one of the prizes available if you donate a certain amount. And they're generating all of this really interesting. I mean, if you look up Rainbow in the Dark on I forgot to mention this tour is called Rainbow in the Dark. Its specific manifestation here at the Alice Coltrane Memorial Coliseum is the Queer Ancestral Noise Fest, because I wanted to bring attention back to unusual queer artistic ancestors and honor them. If you look online, they've been leaving a trail of insanity across the country in the form of all kinds of wild performances and interesting sounds. And many people, when they think about going to a noise show or a noise fest, think they're going to be listening to something like, you know, the whole time. Whereas these are very, what you won't hear is normal. What you won't hear there is normal music, but you'll probably hear everything else, you know, very broken pop. One of the bands I'm excited about having there is a local favorite called Disembalarina, which is a trio or sometimes a quartet of like neoclassical, very, classical instruments and classical technique, but they usually play doom metal shows.
Right on.
You know, so
it's going to be mixing it up, it sounds
yeah,
like.
Yeah, so there's definitely going to be a mix of performance art and like pure sound exploration and, you know, just everything strange and queer.
Wonderful. A classic Rainbow in the Dark.
Yeah.
How beautiful. Now, listeners, please stay tuned. We're not going anywhere. Todd is going to be here, but we are going to take a short musical break and feature another song from Tender Forever. Tender Forever is not part of the event that we were just talking about, but Tender Forever is performing here in Portland August 10th at the Mississippi Studios. So
she doesn't have to play in places like my house anymore.
Oh, no. That's all right. But she would be welcome if she
wanted
to.
I'm sure she would.
Yeah.
She totally would.
Yeah, yeah. So this is another song from the new Tender Forever album. Again, the new album is titled Where Are We From? And this is a short song titled You Get Into.
You look into my eyes and my eyes won't glow. You look into my heart and my love won't show. You're looking for that place you'll never know. I will be gone by tomorrow. You get into my face and my eyes won't blink. You get into my heart, but that heart won't sink. You're looking for that spark, you're lurking in the dark. Gone by the time you're turning back.
Welcome back to Out Loud, the Queer Culture Radio Show on KBOO. That song was brief, but still awesome, titled You Get Into from Tender Forever. Again, Tender Forever performing here in Portland, August 10th at Mississippi Studios. I have been speaking with, my name's Carla, and I've been speaking with Todd about the Queer Ancestral Noise Fest featuring the Rainbow in the Dark tour happening August 14th in Northeast Portland at the Alice Coltrane Memorial Coliseum, which is on Northeast 42nd Avenue, just a little bit south of Killingsworth. Now, for folks that aren't able to write down these details, especially all of you drivers out there, please know that there'll be links and more information on the KBOO website very soon, kboo.fm/outloud. That's also where you can find lots and lots of past Out Loud radio shows. If you'd like to listen to those. So now, Todd, you and I were just talking about this venue, the Alice Coltrane Memorial Coliseum, is really a house.
Yeah, it's a house.
And it does have the Hare Krishna chant on the outside just to help y'all find it when you go looking for it. And it's on the corner of 42nd and
Sumner. Yeah, it's 5135 Northeast 42nd. Okay. The show will be at 7 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to be performing a ceremony honoring our artistic ancestors, particularly queer artistic ancestors. Mm-hmm. And we're asking people
Mm-hmm. What to bring?
To bring photos, reasonably sized photos of past queer ancestors, particularly artists, scientists, witches, and magicians. We are also asking people would bring donations for the travelers. They'll also have a number of merchandise available, and I'm sure all kinds of interesting, bizarre art that would be available for purchase. And we will accept all ages. We are not selling anything there, so
it's not an alcohol site.
It is not an alcohol site. So feel free to. All ages. We would love to have young people come and see strange things that, such as we saw when we were young, that changed our lives and made us into the freaks we are today.
And something else I'd just like to point out, I really, really appreciate that part of this event is honoring those queer ancestors and especially the artists and the musicians and the witches and all the other queer folks in our history and herstory that we don't get to learn about in school. So
absolutely.
I think it's awesome that encouraging young folks and people with children, bring the kitties and let's expose them to some of the stories and some of the people from our community that we don't get to learn about otherwise.
Indeed.
So you talked about folks can expect to hear music, but yet not quite like music.
I think you can expect to hear everything but normal music.
Okay.
There. It will be a wide variety of sounds and experiences. Some of it might be confrontational. Some of it will probably be, you know, deeply relaxing or transcendent. But it's going to be run the gambit because, you know, we're I like to think that the hallmark of really good experimental music is that it brings something from within the artist that is inexpressible and puts it out for people to see in some kind of manner, however they can interpret that.
See, feel, experience, mm-hmm. share
Here.
With their friends.
Exactly.
Use your senses, people. Come to this event and feel it.
Yeah.
There will also be a large school bus parked in front or on the side street, so that'll help you find this location.
Yes, it will look like a complete madhouse because there's no way that even if half the people that say they're going to come on Facebook come, there's no way they'll all fit in my house. So.
Oh, yes. Let's mention the Facebook event because I appreciate you've put links. So for folks that are on Facebook, please find the Queer Ancestral Noise Fest if you do a search for that. Also, if you search for the Rainbow in the Dark Tour, you will find videos on YouTube as well as hopefully the event on Facebook. And one thing I appreciate, Todd, on the Facebook page, you included links to the different artists.
Yeah, so you can hear what you're getting into. There's a lot of different YouTube videos and Bandcamp pages and SoundClouds and so forth.
So folks can get a little sample or kind of know what they're in for or maybe get inspired and bring that inspiration to the event.
Exactly. Get inspired. Make some noise and then come over.
Right on. Now, tell us a little bit about the ceremony or again, what you have to kind of bring this all together.
Well, we have when I moved in, because it was the Alice Coltrane Memorial Coliseum and her spirit is there in a very potent fashion. I started surrounding an image of her with other artist ancestors, both jazz musicians, free improvisers, makers of instruments, people that are important to my particular path and the path of people that live at the house. And I was looking and there wasn't enough queer ancestors. There was John Cage and the members of Coil and some other people, but I figured if this show was going to come, then I needed to make it something that was focused on that. Also, I had a conversation a while back, actually, with Cayenne Pepper after heading back. We were riding our bikes back from that TBA festival.
Mm-hmm.
And we just had this long, intense conversation about queer ancestors and how hungry we felt they were.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, how we felt as artists they were really calling us to, you know, honor them and venerate them, because even if they don't have, you know, normally you worship your ancestors because they have children. And if people don't have children in the normal sense, then their resonance, you know, is wider. And a lot of queer people left their mark on the world through their art or their science or their music or something like that. So, you know, Alan Turing is also, like, people like Alan Turing and, you know, are just as honored in that.
Wonderful. So for folks that are going to, you had asked for folks to bring photos. Or representations of their favorite ancestors or people, queer people that were important to them.
Yeah, and we'll be putting them on the wall and giving them, feeding them and, you know, letting them party with us.
Right on, and enjoying the show as well.
Yes.
Now, this sounds really exciting. For folks that missed the details, we're talking about August 14th. So you got a little bit of time to clear your social calendar. Yeah. And
Next Thursday.
Yep, next Thursday. The event starts at 7 p.m. on the real time, not the Portland time, not the queer time, but 7 o'clock on the dot. You mentioned 13 different performers.
Yes, 13 different performers. So if you come by at any point at that night, we'll probably still be there getting through the getting through the schedule. But
through the performers, okay.
Try not to come after midnight because I'll probably have kicked everybody out by then.
Okay.
Or we'll be at the after party.
Okay,
and
yeah.
You got to be there to find out about the after party.
You got to be there to find out where's the after party. Right on. So again, the Alice Coltrane Memorial Coliseum on Northeast 42nd.
That's 5135, and that's going to be at 7 p.m. sharp.
Right.
You will notice a large school bus in front of the building.
Right on. Well, I'm excited to see what these artists bring to Portland. And unfortunately, we need to start saying our goodbyes, Todd, but I want to be sure you've shared everything you want to share.
This is great. Thanks so much, Carla.
Right on. Well, thank you so much for being our guest and keep up the good work over at the Alice Coltrane Memorial Coliseum.
We will try.
Right on. Now, listeners, stay tuned. We're going to be back in just a few moments with some more community announcements. We're going to take another musical break, this time from Ashley Flynn. Ashley Flynn is performing next Tuesday, a week from tonight, August 12th at 6 p.m. at the Washington Park Rose Garden Amphitheater, part of the Portland Parks and Rec Concerts in the Park. So this is Ashley Flynn.
Million stars in the western sky. It feels we've traveled as many a mile in a Emma Lane Dulay met little bridges on the range. Oklahoma, late 19th century. They met up with a band of thieves. They darned their socks and cooked the meat. They're dragging lawmen for Billy Wild. On their horses, sat upright, both of them crack shots, and both of them wild. And now they supply the whole territory. Or she flee and the press called Marshall Tillman a joke. Tillman vowed his revenge. He pursued Jenny to no end. He shot her horse down as she rode. But your boots on Emily worn a welcome like the soles of your feet. It's getting dark, too dark to see. No moon outside, just a mirror.
That was A Million Stars from Ashley Flynn. That was the name of the song, and it's also the name of her latest CD. Ashley Flynn is performing next week, a week from tonight, Tuesday, August 12th at 6 p.m. at the Washington Park Rose Garden Amphitheater, part of the Portland Parks and Rec Concerts in the Park. And you can find out more about Ashley Flynn at her website. She spells Ashley, A-S-H-L-E-I-G-H. Flynn is F-L-Y-N-N, ashleyflynn.com. Now, another musician I'd like to be sure you know is coming to Oregon. Joan Jett is playing at the Oregon State Fair on Saturday, August 30th at 4 p.m. This is an all-ages show, and the cost is free with your admission to the state fair. Now, I'd like to share a couple of community announcements with you. Queer Intersections Portland is a organization about a little over a year old, and they advocate for and promote the visibility of, and they work to build stronger communities for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer youth and young adults with intersecting marginalized identities. You can find them at their website, qiportland.org. Now, QI Portland hosts a monthly event called the Portland Tea, and this month they welcome Jace Marcus, a young trans activist, to the Portland Tea event this Thursday from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. at the Matt Dishman Community Center, located at 77 Northeast Knott Street in Portland. Now, normally the Queer Intersections Portland events are for young adults and teenagers, but this particular month, adults over 30 are welcome. So again, you can find out more information on the website, qiportland.org. Another community announcement is from the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, which does a lot of amazing work all around Oregon. Actually, they're an international organization. But the Oregon branch of the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence welcomes local nonprofits, actually anybody in Oregon and Southwest Washington. If you work for a nonprofit organization serving the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender community, you are welcome to apply for their grants. The Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence has given away thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars over the last many, many years, and their 2014 grant cycle has officially opened up. Now, all applications must be received by August 29th. So go to their website, portlandsisters.net, for more information. Now, we need to say our goodbyes to Out Loud this evening, and we're going to move into this week's edition of This Way Out, which is the international gay and lesbian news magazine. But before we go to This Way Out, I want to say thank you so much for listening to Out Loud. My name is Carla. Everybody involved with this show is a volunteer. And a big thank you to Boston, who is our engineer.
engineer tonight. Thanks for making me sound like I know what I'm doing, Boston. Couldn't do this without you. And want to say thank you to all the other volunteers here at KBOO, and especially a huge thank you to you, our listener. We do this for you every week, every Tuesday at 6 p.m. Please tune in next week at Tuesday when Alan will be hosting the show next week. So thank you so much for listening. Until next time, stay proud and live out loud.
This decision is a legal travesty. Our country now today stands unprotected. Our children are unprotected.
What the gays are saying is we're going to drive you out of town. Either you conform to us or you must leave.
You as a Christian, I've been together, I think, 33 years in all. Amazing changes occurred. If Chris and I had been told how things would change in just those 30, 40 years, we would have been amazed.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Uganda's constitutional court kills the anti-homosexuality law on a technicality. U.S. televangelist Pat Robertson leads a questionable Bible study. And Don Bacardi discusses his longtime love with fellow animal Christopher Isherwood. All that and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Wendell Jones.
And I'm Michelle Marie Gilkison.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBT communities around the world for the week ending August 2nd, 2014. Uganda's constitutional court has overturned the country's infamous anti-homosexuality law. LGBT activists, attorneys, and allies cheered inside the packed courtroom when the verdict was announced on August 1st in Uganda's capital city, Kampala. The decision came as a surprise to many. Ahead of the previously announced schedule, the court heard and ruled on the case in the span of just a few days this week. A disappointed Pastor Martin Sempa, one of the country's most vocal supporters of the law, spoke with reporters outside the courtroom.
This case has proceeded in a strange manner. We are aware that the registrar of this court had scheduled that this case would be discussed and started in September. We wonder what happened all of a sudden that a case that was supposed to be for September was taken on with lightning speed.
In their lawsuit challenging the anti-homosexuality law, 10 human rights activists charged that there was no legal quorum in Parliament when the measure was approved. House Speaker Rebecca Kadaga, who had publicly promised prompt passage of the measure more than once, ignored a quorum call and engineered the vote on December 20, 2013. President Yoweri Museveni signed the bill into law in late February of this year. Some Western nations, led by the United States, have imposed economic sanctions on Uganda since the anti-homosexuality law was enacted. Sempa was not alone in speculating about the seemingly rushed ruling, noting President Museveni's pending visit to the U.S. for an African summit.
Is there a possibility that the president traveling to Washington next week could have been the reason why this particular case was hurried at lightning speed? We just wonder if indeed our country is independent, and we want to ask the parliament to investigate the independence of the judiciary.
Among other provisions, the anti-homosexuality law punishes private, consensual, adult, same-gender sex with up to life in prison, makes advocacy for LGBT equality a crime, and requires citizens to report suspected homosexuals to the authorities. Rights activists have reported an explosion in the already homophobic country of mob violence, attempted lynchings, extortion, lost jobs, arrests, evictions, arsons, and suicides in the 5 months since the bill became law.
While equality advocates in Uganda and around the world celebrated the constitutional court ruling, many cautioned that it had not struck a blow for LGBT rights, but had only overturned the law on a legal technicality. The government could appeal the ruling to the nation's Supreme Court, or lawmakers could simply pass the law again with the required number of MPs present to vote. High-profile activist Frank Mugisha, one of the plaintiffs in the case and executive director of Sexual Minorities Uganda, told the Associated Press that he was pleased with the ruling, though nervous about possible backlash because the law enjoys widespread public support.
This is the beginning. It's the beginning of a whole very long battle, and we're still going on to fight this battle because we think there's still many challenges. The law has been scrapped on technicalities, so the big picture is still there.
MP David Bahati, the author of the Anti-Homosexuality Act, has close ties to cure-peddling U.S. right-wing Christians. As their cause suffered repeated losses in the U.S., several groups and individuals have fomented fear of sexual minorities in the past several years with repeated evangelical visits to Uganda to warn of creeping homosexuality in the East African nation and especially the threat to vulnerable Ugandan children. A defiant Bahati told reporters that, "Gymnastics and simple technicalities will never rule this country. The morals of the people of Uganda will prevail." For his part, anti-LGBT pastor Martin Sempa also vowed to continue the crusade.
Our country now today stands unprotected. Our children are unprotected. So we are going to fight. We want to enjoin with the Attorney General to appeal this to the Supreme Court. This decision is a legal travesty. It is an insult to all family, culture-loving people in Uganda.
Proponents of reparative therapy claim to be able to cure LGBT people, and one so-called clinic is going on trial in China. The country declassified homosexuality as a mental disorder in 2001. And a gay Chinese man announced this week that he's suing a psychological clinic for carrying out electric shock treatments intended to turn him heterosexual, and giant search engine Baidu for advertising the clinic. 30-year-old Yang Teng told the Associated Press that he voluntarily underwent the treatments in February following pressure from his parents to get married and have children, but that he can now finally accept his homosexual orientation. Yang is suing for the costs of the alleged therapy and his travel to the clinic, as well as lost earnings because of the time he took off from work. He's also demanding an apology on the websites of both companies. Yang's attorney said that a judgment could be issued within 6 months. The Beijing LGBT Center said it's the first court case in the country challenging so-called conversion therapy.
In other news, LGBT Pride was celebrated peacefully this week in Russia, India, and the Faroe Islands. Given the option by St. Petersburg officials of holding a pride rally in a trash dump or an overgrown landfill, activists in Russia's second-largest city rallied instead on July 26th at the Field of Mars in downtown St. Petersburg, where unauthorized political actions are often allowed. About 25 people showed up for the rally. Violence ended efforts to hold a similar event in the same location last year. One participant told the Moscow Times that the lack of violence this year was probably because nationalists and religious conservatives, the groups most vocally opposed to LGBT rights, are preoccupied with the current crisis in Ukraine. The rally was organized by the LGBT rights group Ravnopravya, which is Russian for equality.
An annual Pride March was held for the fifth time in the Indian state of Kerala on the same weekend, and for the first time in the city of Kochi. A public meeting about harassment and persecution of LGBT people by police officials and other bullies was held after the march.
Police in the Faroe Islands estimated that 1 in 10 people in the country marched with LGBT pride on July 27th. The Faroe Islands are an autonomous nation and a dependency of Denmark. Approximately 50,000 people live there, and police said about 5,000 of them were at the march in the capital city of Tórshavn. The Faroe Islands is the only Nordic country other than Finland to deny civil marriage to same-gender couples. Recent polls have shown support for marriage equality among Faroe Islanders, running as high as 68%. But lawmakers defeated a proposal in March to open civil marriage to lesbian and gay couples there by a vote of 20-11.
In this week's U.S. marriage news, the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals has become the latest federal appeals court to strike down a ban on civil marriage for gay and lesbian couples, this time involving the Commonwealth of Virginia. A district judge overturned the ban in February. The Attorney General then filed the appeal at the Fourth Circuit, which heard arguments in mid-May and issued the ruling on July 28th. The Virginia Attorney General's office, under then-Republican Attorney General Ken Cuccinelli, defended the ban until Democrat Mark Herring took office. Herring reversed course and agreed with the plaintiffs that the ban is unconstitutional. That left two county clerks to defend the ban before the Fourth Circuit. State officials are expected to challenge the ruling at the U.S. Supreme Court. Similar to the appeals of Tenth Circuit rulings, overturning Utah's and Oklahoma's ban, the High Court is not obligated to hear any of them. The Richmond-based Fourth Circuit has jurisdiction not only over Virginia, but also over Maryland, which has already opened civil marriage to same-gender couples, as well as West Virginia, North Carolina, and South Carolina. And like the states impacted by the Tenth Circuit rulings, this week's Fourth Circuit decision was stayed, pending a Supreme Court appeal, preventing same-gender couples from immediately marrying in those states.
Within hours of the Fourth Circuit's decision, North Carolina Attorney General Roy Cooper, a Democrat, told reporters that courts have consistently rejected arguments by Virginia and other states citing the supremacy of procreation or the sanctity of traditional marriage.
Since the U.S. Supreme Court ruled in Windsor, all federal courts have rejected these arguments each and every time. So it's time for the state of North Carolina to stop making them.
But South Carolina Attorney General Alan Wilson says he'll continue to defend his state's 2006 voter-approved constitutional ban on civil marriage for gay and lesbian couples. And a spokesman for Republican Governor Nikki Haley said that this administration will continue to uphold the will of the people.
And finally, when do you know that your boss is homophonic? Ask a writer for the Utah-based Noman Global Language Center. The company's social media blogger, Tim Torgeldsen, told the Salt Lake Tribune that he thought that an article he posted about homophones, words that sound the same but have different meanings and often different spellings, for example, bear, B-E-A-R, and bear, B-A-R-E, would be something useful for those in the early stages of learning English. But the company's owner, Clark Woodger, warned Torgeldsen that the article suggested that the school was promoting homosexuality. And when the writer posted his Facebook exchanges about it with Woodger, he was fired. Noman is Utah's largest private English as a second language school and caters primarily to foreign students seeking admission to U.S. colleges and universities. Woodger says that most only have a rudimentary grasp of English and worried that some students may see the homo and think it has something to do with gay sex.
That's News Wrap for the week ending August 2nd, 2014. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap was written by Greg Gordon, recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles, and produced by Steve Pride.
News Wrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. For This Way Out, I'm Michelle Marie Gilkison.
And I'm Wenzel Jones.
All about Edmund White's latest memoir and Christopher Isherwood's love life later in the program. The case of a Colorado cake shop was settled in early June with the State Civil Rights Commission ordering the proprietor to stop discriminating against same-gender couples. Televangelist Pat Robertson's predictably perverse analysis on his conservative Christian 700 Club this week was noted by Right Wing Watch.
If God in his word says that it's an abomination for a man to lie with a man as with a woman, that's what it says, it's an abomination. And also the Bible says that for these things the land shall vomit you out. And so there's a clear warning that those who participate, the name of this stuff is sodomy. And it has to do with a city named Sodom that was given over to all kinds of perverse sex practices. They even wanted to have sex with angels. And God destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. That's what the term comes from, the destruction. And so what our civil rights commissions and others are saying is we want to endanger our society and set it up for the judgment of God. And if you Christians don't like it, then get out. Because, well, I don't know. Lot apparently didn't like what was happening in Sodom and Gomorrah, and some angels took him out. We don't really want to leave because we like it. And that gentleman out in Colorado likes his business. He's been in business for a long time. And what the gays are saying is, we're going to drive you out of town. Either you conform to us or you must leave. That's the message that's being put out. It's the same message that there was in Sodom and Gomorrah. You're either going to have sex with angels or have open sex with anybody, or else you leave or you go out of business. That's America. You don't want that, do you?
Ironically, televangelist Pat Robertson's hate speech may be a better example of sodomy than loving LGBT people are. According to the book of Ezekiel, "Now this was the sin of your sister Sodom. She and her daughters were arrogant, overfed, and unconcerned. They did not help the poor and needy. They were haughty and did hateful things before me."
This is Bishop Gene Robinson, and you are listening to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine.
The letters and times of the animals, after the observations of the keeper at a different zoo.
Americans were and are the least seductive of people. After all, America and Britain are the countries where a politician can be pushed out of office or impeached if it's discovered he has a mistress, or even an overeager intern with no sense of discretion. In France, seduction is a form of politeness.
That was Edmund White with a tasty tidbit from his latest memoir, Inside a Pearl, My Years in Paris. Our queer life and literature commentator, Janet Mason, was a bit surprised to discover how easily she was able to relate to White's words.
I knew about Edmund White long before I read his books. I knew that he was a gay icon and had written many books, fiction and nonfiction. I knew that he was especially known for his coming-of-age novel, A Boy's Own Story, written in 1982, around the time that it came out. I knew that he had lived in Paris for a time and had written a biography of Jean Genet, the controversial French poet, playwright, and novelist who was born in 1910. When I heard about White's latest book, Inside a Pearl, My Years in Paris, I decided that it was time to read Edmund White. As a lesbian writer, even as one who has known many interesting people, I have very little in common with White. When I started reading Inside a Pearl, which is replete with name-dropping, complete with a description of one of Elton John's parties, this became clear to me. But I kept reading. And what I found was Edmund White I could relate to, one who could lay his life on the page. I heard it said that a writer's best asset is willingness to be vulnerable. It was when I read about White's experiences as a caretaker of friends and lovers with HIV, and being HIV positive himself, along with the ups and downs of his friendships with both men and women, that I began to relate to him. His vulnerabilities made him human. He ruminates about his decision to live in Paris. I asked myself why I was here. Sure, I'd wanted Guggenheim and a small but regular contract with Vogue to write once a month on cultural life. In New York, when I was president of Gay Men's Health Crisis, the biggest and oldest AIDS organization in the world, I hadn't liked myself in the role of leader. I was power mad and tyrannical, and secretly I wanted the party to go on and thought that moving to Europe would give me a new lease on promiscuity. Paris was meant to be an AIDS holiday. After all, I was of the Stonewall generation, equating sexual freedom with freedom itself. But by 1984, many gay guys I knew were dying in Paris as well. There was no escaping from the disease. White goes on to write about his life in Paris and the friendships that he forged, many through his writing projects. He also writes about the French tradition of older gay men calling their younger lovers their nephew. He writes about interaction between two gay men when one says to the other, "Do you know my nephew?" and the other replies, "Yes, he was my nephew last year." Pat, who was notorious in London literary circles for her affair with Jeanette Winterson, looked around and said, "What's annoying about Paris is that every woman looks like a lesbian but none is." White goes on to write, "Pat was one of my favorite people." In his sardonic style, White introduces us to the cast of characters that he has met and interacted with on the road of life. Not surprisingly, many, such as Susan Sontag, did not like being written about in his previous works, and he writes about that also. Edmund White has been in the company of many well-known people, but what Inside a Pearl left me with was a deeper knowing of Edmund White, the writer, the gay icon, the human being. This is Janet Mason with commentary on queer life and literature for This Way Out.
There's nothing so international as a powerful idea. I'm Edmund White.
It is the overwhelming international flavor of the lesbian and gay rights movement that has proved so powerful over the past couple of decades. And one radio program has been there to record, to inform, and to entertain. So please keep listening to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine on this station.
Love letters straight from your heart. Keep us so near while apart.
A kind of intimacy we express with each other seemed to me too good not to share. And since they would probably be published sometime or other after I'm dead, why not enjoy it while I'm alive?
Last time on This Way Out, we learned how the legendary glitterati Christopher Isherwood and the much younger portrait artist Don Bacardi began their more than 30-year relationship in 1953. A collection of love letters called The Animals captures their lives together. Bacardi continues his intimate revelations in the conclusion of his conversation with Charlie Bauer, Ph.D.
We always slept in the same bed. We were often wrapped around each other, sleeping. And that physical intimacy, I think, fed our relationship and kept it on a very intimate basis throughout. He died in the bed that we slept in, and I was with him the whole time.
It's just a perfect antidote to any questioning about love affairs and relationships, irrespective of gender. And the fact that you and Chris were able to keep that going to that point and to take someone to their passing. Until recently, until it was legal, a lot of people didn't have a choice in that.
Well, you see, Chris and I adopted each other to avoid any difficulties should one of us get sick. And indeed, it was a very practical decision, because when Chris was hospitalized toward the end of his life, a few days before I could get him back here into the house, there was no question of my having access to him in his hospital room, because I officially was his son.
There was a lot of times when families would take over the death of loved ones.
Yes, and disapproving family. Years that Chris and I were together, I think 33 years in all, amazing changes occurred. It was still a very primitive situation in the early 50s. If Chris and I had been told how things would change in just those 30, 40 years, we would have been amazed.
And in a way, it completely revalidates through this book your intense love for each other throughout that period.
And yes, you know, it gave it more significance, more intensity, I think, because it was still frowned on, and it was our wonderful secret that we could be two men living together intimately in our house, despite of all the disapproval that lurked right outside the front door.
What was kind of interesting, I think, particularly within your circle, is when David Hockney began to do these visual representations of queer culture.
David and Chris came from the same part of England, and Chris was the first person, David Cole, when he came to Santa Monica for the first time in 64. He just found him in the phone book and called him up right away, the first, second day he was here.
I think this is a really important book. Like I said, it's the subtext of everything we think we already know. But the other side of that, which is the real and sometimes brutal honesty, are the love letters, which I think are the ones, this is what's going to endure.
Well, you have both voices. And also, I think there are a lot of laughs in the book.
You can't get away from the fact that these are all the people you know and come into contact with all the time, who maybe at that time weren't as important, as iconical as they became.
It's real gossip and first-hand hot gossip.
I couldn't put it down for those very reasons. I was leapfrogging from one to the next to the next. As I say, I mean, they were all your Christopher and his kind and Don and his kind.
You see, in the early days, it was remarkable that Chris was that rare queer who didn't hide me away. And it was certainly embarrassing for him to have not only such a young lover, but a very young-looking lover. But he was damned if he was going to hide me away in a closet. So he insisted. He took me every... he was very close friends with Igor and Vera Stravinsky, and that was one of the first houses he took me to. Wow. And they were so sweet and adorable to me. They didn't show any kind of disapproval, nor did the Huxleys. But others did. Others were thought that Chris would actually be seen in public. He'd take me to parties with movie stars. Is he just shameless?
It's
and I was just all eyes. I was just having a great time.
Was there
time.
Ever a point that you felt so uncomfortable that it was too much for you to bear in those sort of social situations?
Oh, no, I could bear anything. I was very, very tough. Well, I had this man supporting me morally, financially, and encouraging me every step of the way.
And that's part of our queer code. I mean, that's kind of what we've built up, thanks to you. Those those codes have been passed on and on and on and on and on.
I hope so, yes. Yes, and I think in some sense or other, Chris felt that responsibility that we would have a public image as a gay couple and not have to tremble in the shadows because we weren't ashamed of ourselves.
Maybe it's because Chris...
You are tuned in to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, also heard around the world at www.kbu.fm. You just got done hearing Out Loud, which airs every Tuesday evening from 6 p.m. to 7 o'clock p.m. The time is 7 o'clock. Stay tuned for Hard Knock Radio coming up after these messages.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Vietnam, an interview, a live performance and book release event. On Saturday, August 9th, 6 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church, 1034 Southwest 13th Avenue in Portland. The presentation will feature live original music, music videos, dramatic readings, and a discussion with the producers. That's Vietnam, an interview, in commemoration of the 50th anniversary of the Tonkin Gulf Resolution. Saturday, August 9th, 6 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church in Portland. More information can be found